We can get started on that right away. I know Greg's on his way up here probably from somewhere, although I don't see him back there in the back. Greg Johnson from the Andersons will make his way forward. But nonetheless, we have a couple of other folks up here that we'll get started with our Cash Grain panel with. Ken Smith is with us. He's from the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. We talk to Ken, or normally Matt Blaisdell, on Wednesday afternoons about 25 after the hour of 2 o'clock. And then on Fridays, we talk with Bruce Bossert. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. And they're, is it 10? Is that right? 10 Central Illinois elevators. So let's talk about the cash grain market very quickly. Basis, gentlemen, has been awfully good for corn. Tell me the reasons why in your areas. And we'll start with you, Bruce.
Basis on corn has come back nicely from where we were a year ago. A lot of that has been from the low board prices. Low board, high basis is a truism from Econ 101, but that's what we've seen out here. Cash movement has been slow as prices broke back. The producer put corn in storage, and the basis has been coming up to pull it out. Now, for the last month or two, we were helped by the river freezing up. I'm a CN train loader, so I love frozen Illinois rivers.
Okay. Ken?
I think Bruce hit it right on the head. The guys I talked to, it's surprising the amount of corn and soybeans that are in the bin. So we have certainly seen significantly slower movement than we did a year ago. I think a lot of difficulty in selling, you know, less than $4 corn and selling, you know, less than $10 beans has strengthened basis significantly. But I think there is a day of reckoning coming. In addition, we've had fairly strong ethanol demand. We've got several ethanol plants in the Midwest that have been running for less than 2 years. So you've got a more steady demand than we had in the past. So I think a combination of the slow movement and a strong corn demand has given us very strong corn basis.
And Greg Johnson.
I would want to lock in old crop corn basis now. As everyone has mentioned, there is corn out there. There's a lot of old crop corn to be sold. Markets have gone down. Farmers are kind of waiting, stubborn, waiting for this little bit of a rally, which I think we'll get. And if we see corn move up 25. If we see corn move up 25, 30 cents here in the next 3 weeks, in and around that March 31 acreage report, I think you will see corn move, old crop corn move, and as a result of that, basis levels will weaken. So lock in your old crop corn basis now and then sell on a rally.
Okay, I'm going to ask the other two if they agree with that momentarily, but we need some more data from you. This time I actually probably am going to ask for percentages. The first one is who has, and hold your hands up, who has old crop corn to sell? Okay, everybody. It wasn't, but it was close. All right, I won't get too hard on you. Who has more than half of their old crop corn to sell? Okay, you're not alone. All right. So do you agree with locking in the basis at this point?
I don't have a problem with it. We're here where not only do we have the basis for the big macro reasons and the movement logistics are messed up with roads being posted and people not able to move corn, so if you're in a position to move some of that, the danger is always when everybody tries to hit the door at the same time. And that's my fear. If we get into the tail end of the summer, we're pulling bins out that are full, haven't been cored, put away too wet, then I've got to deal with the damage. And if everybody's hitting the door at the same time, it could be ugly.
That sounds like a familiar problem that we have had in the past. We get to the end of June, July, and August, and we just drop the market like a son of a gun. And does everybody think that that might be in the cards for this year? And whether it's the basis or the market, either one?
I think that's true, but it's going to be very interesting. I think the cash farmer today has a very strong position. With the returns he had last year, can he hold that grain longer than what the market anticipates? So that's the real dynamic that merchandisers like to talk about. When do we see general producer movement? You know, will we see it later? Will it be that late July, August, or is it going to be August? It's going to be interesting. So perhaps basis could be strong post-planting, not a big window of time, but I'd probably be in Greg's camp. The most safest route is to get grain priced today.
Ken, you're co-located with the Clymers ethanol production facility there. How has the marketplace for corn for you, and I know it hasn't been in operation that long, but how has it changed this year as a prayer compared to how many previous years, two or three?
Yeah, you know, our plant's been running almost 2 years now, but I think in our marketplace in Indiana, the eastern Indiana ethanol presence has changed how corn moves. We're seeing corn move from Illinois to my plant at Clymers. We're seeing corn move from Illinois to eastern Indiana. That movement just did not happen prior to last year. So the new presence of new players in the market, it takes a while to establish, partners and relationships. So movement in eastern Indiana has been difficult. That's almost made it the new center of the corn universe, more so than what Decatur, Illinois. So it's been an interesting dynamic. So that dynamic has changed just in the last 2 years.
Well, I want to talk about that just a little bit because I grew up not very far from Decatur, and basis around Decatur has always been good because it was the black hole for most people. But we have so many ethanol plants that the landscape really has changed now. So the question I think that maybe we ought to look back on is as we were building these ethanol plants, everybody thought, well, it floats the whole boat. Rising tide brings everybody up. Is that the case, or is it just locally around those plants? I think you might argue that the rising tide brought everybody up, and the eastern Corn Belt in particular, and maybe if you get out into Iowa, them too. Is that right? They look confused.
Wasn't exactly sure what you're asking, but basically the influx
the
of
the basis
ethanol
narrow because of the ethanol plants was
in the east.
Reason.
Yeah, you're seeing 20 over basis levels in Indiana and Ohio for cash corn, which is unheard of, and that spilled over into Illinois. So you're seeing slight overs in Illinois basis levels. You know, slight 2, 3, 4 cents over the May, which we haven't seen for a long time, and then you're still seeing the 20 under basis levels maybe in Iowa, but they're used to 30 and 40 under. So we're seeing a spillover effect, but the ethanol plants have been added in the eastern Corn Belt, and so the basis spillover is working from east to west.
Well, then this brings me back to the other question. We've kind of laid the foundation or groundwork for this question then. Do you truly – I know you suggested that they lock in that cash basis on the overage at the moment. But has it changed enough that it's more permanent and they may not necessarily need to lock it in?
Okay. And I want to talk about the market doesn't go straight down or straight up. There's ups and downs. So we have to talk about time. Over the next 45 days, for example, that's probably when a lot of people want to move corn and want to sell some corn. That's when I suggest locking the basis. If you're going to move corn, you're going to price corn in the next 45 days, I think basis levels are probably as good as you're going to see. They'll probably get weaker if we get this futures rally that I think we'll get. Farmers will sell corn, basis will weaken. Now, later on into the summer, who knows? Maybe the farmers sell all they need to sell. Ethanol plants need more corn, basis levels get better. But that's 60, 90 days down the road. I'm talking about the next 45 days.
I think that we're looking at $1.8 billion carryout on corn, probably more like a $2 billion carryout on corn, and a pretty flat July to new crop flat price number. The numbers aren't there to carry that over, and something's going to build in to pay somebody to carry that 2 billion bushels of corn over.
I'm going to differ just a little bit, and I think it depends on if you're located near a newer ethanol plant. I think those plants are probably not well bought into the summer. So, you know, if you're not tributary to a new plant, I would agree. But if you're close to a new plant, you may get bailed out because at this low price level, you know, when does that general movement come? You may have an opportunity to sell a higher basis level just because you're dealing with someone who has not got well established, grain into their facility yet.
Questions out here? Anybody got a question? Yes, sir.
Explain the blend 10% to 12 possibility. And does everybody blend 10%? I think Dan or somebody on your radio station one day said, well, nobody's got thrown in jail by not moving up to those levels. Is that nationwide? Is that just where ethanol is and some fudging going on? I mean, how do we gauge that?
I'll just give you a quick perspective. A year ago, ethanol prices were, 40 to 50 cents a gallon less than gasoline. So we had a lot of what we call discretionary blenders that if you can take ethanol and blend it, in addition to that, you had a 50-cent blender's credit, so you could essentially net a dollar less than gasoline. We had a lot of blenders in the country that were blending because it was very profitable. That dynamic has changed significantly in the last year, where today ethanol is a 40 to 50 cent premium to unleaded gasoline. So those discretionary blenders, the people that don't have to do it, and really it's the EPA that has a mandate of how much ethanol has to be blended in gasoline. But in the Midwest, most gasoline is blended. It's blended very close to a 10% level. As you get outside the Midwest, most areas are blending gasoline, but it's probably less than 10% unless you're in California and other areas that are mandated to use it. So the discretionary blending has stopped from a year ago. Petroleum companies absolutely don't want to blend more than they have to. I mean, it hurts their refining capacity. It hurts their margins. So there's going to be resistance from there. If the economics work, we'll blend close to 10%, and we could blend a higher level. There's a lot of infrastructure problems. A lot of the distribution, the refining areas, don't have the infrastructure to blend at much more. So we have what we call a blending wall, where we're getting close to maximum capacity of blending in the marketplace today. To push it to 12 or 15% will be challenging. But if the economics work, we'll get there.
I've had the question, what is the overall health of the ethanol industry?
Ken?
All right. I would say today...
Well, you're sitting at the ethanol plant, yeah. So you get to answer, don't you?
I would say today we have small margins. So it is profitable to run an ethanol plant today. When I say that, I'm not including the depreciation cost for the plant. Our plant at Clymers was built kind of at a fortunate time. Just within a year after that, the cost of plants almost doubled. So if you paid $200 million plus for an ethanol plant, you're seeing a very small return on your investment. So we're not likely to see many more new ethanol plants being built in the U.S. But if you have an existing plant that is running, it is profitable, not by a lot, but it is profitable. As we think about what happens in the future, we talked about these EPA mandates. Those mandates go up. Today we have more than 12 billion gallon capacity in the U.S. Not all that capacity is running, closer to 10 billion. But within the next year to two, if we hold these mandates, it looks like we will put that capacity in production. And I think the future of the ethanol business looks okay. That assumes that crude oil demand will probably recover after we get out of this recession. That's how I see it today.
Well, we've talked a lot about ethanol and production for ethanol and usage on that end, but of course, it only uses a quarter of the crop, 25% or thereabouts. So we've got a lot of crop left out there to talk about. Bruce, why don't you tell me, you've got a loader facility, where does most of it go?
Most of it goes to, it's split between export to chicken feeders in Mississippi to an ethanol plant in Tennessee.
Oh, then you have a good handle. So let's talk about the other two, the livestock, poultry in particular. They've had some pretty tough times, I think, in the past. I want to know how that industry seems to be faring for you. And then why don't you talk a little bit about the export market, too?
Well, we've really changed the dynamics on all three of those from last year. Last year, people had money. We were scared about high prices. You bought ahead to ensure supply. People had a book on. This year, you don't have much of a forward book on. If you are an importer, chicken plucker, or a ethanol plant, you don't have a whole lot of book on because you can't lock in a profit very far out. The ethanol plants can't sell ethanol very far out into the future, so that limits how far out, unless they want to just go flat long in the future, how long they're going to go. The chicken guy, same way. He doesn't have really good profitability out there. He's more of a hand-to-mouth buyer. Our import customers are more like hand-to-mouth buyers than they were a year ago. You've got the other thing there that even if they do want to go and buy forward, they go to the finance department to try and get a letter of credit or the money to buy forward, and they're going to be a lot more restrictive on how far out they're going to put a position on.
So that brings me to risk management to some extent. We'll talk to you, Greg, about this. And risk management in terms of how far out will your bids go at this point? And last year, producers wanted to potentially take advantage of bids that were further out, could not. If the marketplace has changed such that they're feeding, that they're hand to mouth, are the elevators going to be willing to take the risk with the producer? Or has this become a just-in-time delivery sort of system where that risk management really is going to end up in the farmer's hand as opposed to in the elevator's hand?
Okay, right off the bat, I'll admit, we didn't think corn was going to go to $7 or $8 last year. It caught the whole industry by surprise, let's be honest, okay? When it did, nobody imagined the millions and millions of dollars that it was going to take to send margin money to Chicago. So maybe we overreacted. Maybe we just couldn't get the money in. We as an industry, okay? This year, we know that it can happen. It happened last year. We've taken measures. We've lined up better credit lines with our banks. We went out and bought $5, $6 calls, which will make us money to meet margin calls in case this market does do that again. So it probably won't since we're now protected against it. But, you know, will we buy corn for 09 and 010? Yes. Will we do it with everybody? We'll want to make sure that who we're doing business with. Who we're doing business with has become a very, very important part of the ag business. We've seen ethanol companies go out of business. We've seen some farmers go out of business. We need to know who we're doing business with. But if, you know, we may ask for letters of credit, we may ask for financial statements, but the bottom line is, if you've been doing business with someone for a long time and you've got a good reputation, yes, we'll still continue to buy corn from you 2 years out.
It is going to be challenging for an ethanol facility, though, or for a grain handler. You know, when you have $7 or $8 corn, where should basis be? And you have $3 corn, where should basis be? And when we think about our forward bids, no one is buying those deferred values, so we are really taking an educated guess on where basis level should be for, more than a year out. So I think elevators are going to have bids out there, but they're going to be conservative because, will corn be $3 a bushel? Will it be $7 a bushel? What will ethanol demand be? So basis volatility, just the same as futures volatility, I think is going to be as great as it ever has been. And elevators are going to, and merchandisers are going to have a tough time figuring out where our fair value's at.
Is there any chance of the wheat basis improving?
I'll go first. I think so, yes. I've told people not to lock in basis. I think we're $1.20 under. Last year we saw $2 under basis levels in a lot of places. But I think the wheat acres are down, and I don't get the sense that farmers are selling wheat, and I think basis is all about movement and storage availability. I think there will be storage room available for wheat this summer, so I think basis levels will get better. You know, some people remember the good old days of 35 under basis levels. You know, that's probably not going to happen, but I don't think we need to see triple digits. I'm waiting for something in the double digits before I would want to recommend locking in basis.
I do think grain elevators, especially if they've been impacted by an ethanol plant sitting right beside them, are going to have interest in buying wheat and storing wheat. So I do think there is some hope for basis levels improving on wheat.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that I think wheat basis has got a good chance of coming back. I mean, the wheat purchases that were bought and hedged last year have worked out for elevators. We're not seeing the crazy board rallies that basis had to offset. I mean, last year we had a disparity. People were buying Chicago wheat for the concept of wheat. They weren't buying soft red winter. And we were buying an actual commodity. And you saw that basis just get crazy compared to board prices. That's come in some. I think it can come in more.
Back to the question of ethanol, how much ethanol are we importing?
Yeah, I don't know the values. We are importing a small amount of ethanol, but, you know, I would say it's generally insignificant today.
I have a question concerning soybean bases. We have a low carryover. I would think if there's going to be any basis pop, it would be in soybeans. What's your take on that?
Soybean basis has been very good. We've seen overs into the processor market, 10 to 20 over numbers into Decatur. So you've seen good basis numbers out there. We've seen good export demand, some good spot sales on soybeans. The market has been trying to generate bean movement in the face of the farmer being a reluctant seller. Basically, at these kind of basis levels, elevators don't own any beans or very few beans right now. The danger side is that we're moving to where we can lose the export market or probably have as it switches gears and goes to South America. So it's a domestic market right now, and that can be hit or miss depending on how their crush margins are and how much downtime. So you can see some spikes as they cover a sale and then disappear for a week or two.
I think if you look at crush margins today, they are very poor, some of the poorest that we've seen in recent years. So I really think the key to soybean basis is what does meal do? We know oil stocks continue to grow. So what is that domestic, producer in the U.S., livestock producer, how strong will the demand for meal be? If meal carries the crush margin, then I think soybean basis will follow.
I would agree with Bruce and Ken on both the old crop. I just want to throw out new crop basis. Let's not forget about that. If you haven't picked up on it yet, I really think we're going to see less corn acres and more bean acres than what they were using at the Outlook Forum in Washington. We'll find out on March 31. But let's assume that we plant 5 million more acres of beans. We could have a pretty big carryout. Our basis right now for new crop beans is 45 under. I just went back the last 5 years and looked. Last year at this time, we were 80 under for new crop beans. By the time fall rolled around, we had improved to 50 under. Year before, we were 22 under in March, 35 under in the fall, 21 under the year before that, 18 under the year before that. So basis levels for new crop beans could be extremely wide if we plant a lot of beans. That's the one area that I would say you might want to consider to lock in basis. New crop corn, we're going to plant less corn acres. There's going to be plenty of space. It doesn't take as much space to store 50 bushel beans as it does 180 bushel corn. So I look for new crop corn basis to get a whole lot better. But the new crop bean basis could, a lot of ifs there. If we plant 5 million more acres, if we have a good crop, bean basis may get a little weaker. So that's the one that's not that bad compared to where it was last year. So keep an eye on that new crop bean basis, but I think you can afford to wait on new crop corn.
I wanted to hear the panel's spin on the one thing I haven't heard about this ethanol thing that seems of interest to me is that's Valero's potential getting into the ethanol business. It seems like to me that's a pretty significant thing, one of the largest domestic refiners. So what's the spin on that as we look at what they're thinking of doing and what kind of competition that might be?
Anybody want to take up the oil industry buying part of Verisun's
You know, they haven't
bankruptcy.
They haven't bought those Verisun assets yet. They are, many of those facilities, you know, are up for auction, and you know, the closing dates on those are coming up, you know, very soon. But you know, Valero, if you look at how they've grown in the U.S., they've bought oil refineries very cheap. I think they put a bid out for ethanol capacity. If they get it at that value, I think they'll be happy with it. But my guess is they will not get all the assets that that they've bid on. I think long-term oil has an interest in owning ethanol facilities or partnering with ethanol facilities. So it's not surprising, but it certainly will be interesting to see how the Verisun assets sell and who ends up with them.
All right, we'll close it out with that question. Give these folks a nice round of applause, please.